Do not adjust your radio dial. You are tuned in to the Mark Order Podcast. Join the Mark Order.
It's Mark Order Podcast coming to you live. We have quite a dynamite to talk about tonight. And it's funny, Ryan's feeling a little under the weather and Joe couldn't be here. And we were like, should we cancel? Should we push through? Ryan was like, no, I've got this. I'm going to push through. And right before we went live, I was like, well, thank God we did, because what an episode of Dynamite tonight. Chat along with us. We see Scott George. We see Big G. We see Taylor Cannon. Hello, hello, hello. Pieces in the chat. Are we ready to be toxic? Not even in a, listen, I like Kit Wilson on SmackDown. I really do. But tonight is all about the toxic because new champions, including Miss Tekla. Ryan, normally we banter at the top a little bit. We chit chat, we catch up. You're sick. This is a loaded Dynamite. I don't want to drag too much into it. So I will say hi. I hope you're feeling well. How are you doing? But let's dive in quick because there's a ton to talk about. You're not feeling great. And my God, I'm excited to talk about this Dynamite, Ryan.
Well, apparently I'm feeling better than Scott George, who passed a kidney stone today. And I've done that and they're no fun.
Oh, Jesus.
But I'm all right. I apologize to anyone if I accidentally cough on mic. I'm going to try not to. And if my voice cuts out. Whatever I caught, flu, COVID, cold, whatever, has had a hold of me for over a week now, and it is quite strong.
I've never gotten COVID, so I don't know what that's like, if that is what you have. I can't relate, unfortunately.
Yeah, you've never had it. You wouldn't know anything
about
it.
I've never had it. Certainly not every strand of it. Man, Scott, I'm so sorry to hear that. That's such an exquisitely painful thing, I hear. So I hope you are on the mend, feeling better. Hopefully wrestling provided a nice distraction for you tonight, but man, I think this is an all-timer of a Dynamite. I feel like the beginning of the year has been a very productive stretch for them, Ryan, and a lot of that has been the clarity at the top of the card. Like there's fresh and new faces coming for MJF, but there's also like our stalwarts doing other important things. Title adjacent, like still sniffing around gold. In Hangman's case, he kind of unexpectedly walked into this trio's gold, right? So the product just feels at a really healthy place in general right now. But what I love tonight is how much movement we've gotten in the mid card since Ciampa came in. A lot of, as much of a top of the card act as the Callis family is, like a lot of what they're doing is mid card stuff. And that makes things feel really fresh and good here. I think that they are on a really, really productive start at the beginning of 2026 here. Hell of a show tonight. What did you think?
It was boring. I don't think anything happened. And, you know, it was one of the best Dynamites in a long time. And they've been doing really well anyway. So it wasn't like this is like, oh, God, finally they've had a good one. This is the best in a series of really good Dynamites. And it, in a weird way, felt go-homey, even though Grand Slam isn't a pay-per-view, but it still felt like, and I don't even say go-homey because actual stuff happens, which usually doesn't, but like, I don't know, it felt very important.
It did the job of elevating your excitement for what's to come, yeah. A go-home supposed to. Yeah, I'm with you on that because you're right. It did feel go-homey in that sense. But one thing that I feel like they did really well in 2025 that not enough people talked about, but I've been saying ad nauseum. I'm so sorry if the people that tune into this show have heard me say this already, is like their pay-per-view pacing got so much better last year. And I said, you know, they went from 4 to 12 basically, or 11, very, very quickly. And that really threw off a lot of their 2023. I felt like the builds were all over the place. Some felt exhausted. Some felt way too rushed and thrown together. And last year, I feel like they corrected that. And then with this year, it's like we're we actually have breathing room between the top of the year and Revolution, because it's later, but they have this big collision show coming up. There's a rejuvenation in the roster that we're going to talk about, what a splash Tommaso Ciampa's made, because my God, what a match with him and Kyle Fletcher tonight. But you're right in that it's been a slow, steady stream of like really solid. I feel like it was, the product was good, and then it started to get really good, and tonight was like fantastic, blew it out of the water kind of thing. Like, I very rarely find Dynamite to be bad as a whole. I find it when it's fine, it's really boring. Like when it's good, it's good. It's good wrestling television. When it's great though, oh, is it great? And we are in great mode, and pretty much from front to back with this one. One thing I immediately noticed, Ryan, before we dive in here, one, we joke, you, Joe, and I, about like, God, they have so many overruns that are unnecessary. It feels like, I'm just like, they'll have overruns where you're like, we don't need to. We could find other places in the show where we could have chopped stuff down. Like, don't do overruns for the sake of overruns. Tonight was earned, because there isn't a minute of television I feel like I would have changed, really. And the other thing was, man, I love having Bryan Danielson on commentary. Like, he definitely shouldn't out-travel his neck or his paternal responsibilities. If part of the deal is, well, Brie Bella's back in WWE, he's home a little bit more. But, like, during that strap match, especially, and during the Fletcher-Ciampa match, there were just things that he adds with his level of excitement combined with wrestler knowledge that is, I think, rare. I feel like when a wrestler injects their knowledge into something, they almost are trying to do it in a way that commands an academic sense of things. But Bryan Danielson is just, like, always freaking out about wrestling, and it makes it so much fun. So those were two just production things that I noticed right away. Like, always wonderful to have Danielson on commentary. And tonight's overrun, unlike a lot of them, felt very, very earned.
Yeah, they kind of abuse the overrun. But that's a very, like, as someone who did watch in the heyday of the Attitude and Nitro stuff, where the overrun, I think, first became like a thing. They abused it too. Like, there's so many times you just don't need to over. Actually,
we are desperately,
I know,
out of time. Raw for many years.
Exactly. I mean, Raw for many years, even after it, the whatever wars, when they were not doing insane business, would overrun. And I'm like, why? You know, you have it set time slot. I think there's something to not just the wrestling show. I would assume there's a very big positive for the TV television channel, because maybe it helps. I don't know. There's something there, obviously. They wouldn't do it if it didn't help both.
So from my understanding is, and this is just in general, this is NXT, this is AEW, whatever, is that networks don't care that much if what's coming on after it doesn't have a demand to start that way. So like, it's, if there's not like a, we need to start whatever's after, meaning like live sports event or something, it's just the way that you rearrange the commercials within a given time. So networks are usually pretty okay with it if you can commit to also being out on your overrun by an appropriate time, because then they rearrange the commercials and they have nowhere to make it up on the back end of their programming blocks. So I think from what you were saying, though, like the perspective is if you abuse the overrun, it doesn't feel special anymore. The like, we're going to stay with it as long as it takes. We're like, okay, so 7 minutes every week or something is not enticing to the viewer, right?
No, because we know that it's basically around 10:07, 10:08, it's going to end. So it's like saying, we're going to stay with this however long it takes, and you started it at 9:53. Well, if we know the show is going to end at 10, whatever. Tonight was against that because they went beyond their typical length for the overrun. They went beyond when our show starts. I mean, I think it was like 10:16 when that thing ended. And so you're talking, I don't want them to do that a lot, because then you'll be, but at least it makes it seem like, well, maybe every now and again an overrun is necessary, because you don't know when this will end. But I still think they could cut it back and just end more shows at 10. That's another, but I'm not a TV exec, so what do I care? But at least the match was worth it. It wasn't like, oh, we're going to stay with this as long as it takes. And at 10:05, you're like, oh, they're wrapping it up right here. All right. Yeah. And now we have 2 minutes of nothing.
It was a women's world title strap match. So like, earned for sure. And it was a great one. And Ryan, like, sometimes when we do these shows, I try to be like, oh, we'll start with the hot thing and we'll close with the hot thing and we'll talk about everything else in the middle. This whole show was hot tonight. So I'm just going to go in chronological order. Cause this from front to back was just a fantastic show. And it starts really strong with this promo between Swerve and Kenny. And I loved this exchange. I thought this was one of Kenny's most natural promos since he got back. They talk about their tension starting with Maximum Carnage. I love that Swerve has been like feeling kind of like a face with an edge or a tweener. And now I'm like, oh no, he's going heel. And I feel like we got that in really vivid color tonight, because he says he has things he wants to get off his chest and basically calls him out honorably. Like, I liked that this started. He's not like so dastardly as Swerve can get, but he comes out and basically says, when I signed here, you were the cleaner. You were the best bout machine. Everybody was trying to get to Kenny Omega, but when I come to Rise, like, you are nowhere to be found. You're in a hospital bed, or you're like kind of hiding out in other pockets here. A lot of you were a wrestling god, and then when you were absent, the congregation started chanting whose house. I loved all of that kind of like symbolism here. And Kenny kind of goes, well, I didn't call myself the god of wrestling, the fans did. And he was like, I never begged them to wear my t-shirts, hold my signs, anything like that. It's in the eye of the beholder. And Kenny wants to make it to the top of the mountain one more time, but it's important for him to do it the right way. Swerve kind of starts to question things. He says, is it an abuse of your EVP power? He says he's been dealing with like these corny ass EVPs basically running around and tormenting him for a long time, which I love that call too, because he is at his best when he's tormenting members of the Elite, as a lyric said on Twitter, which is true. But I also love Kenny saying, hey, if you need someone to burn whose house down, I know a guy, he's my friend, referring to Adam Page. And they continue to kind of back and forth about who's the most dangerous man in AEW, sort of anoints himself that. Kenny says, I think that's Brody King right now, actually. But we finally get physical contact at the end of this. Omega slapping Swerve, and the challenge is put forth here for next week. So this feels like a hot feud that's been brewing in the background and then also kind of just emerged out of nowhere in the same way. Like, I love when feuds are like that, where it's like they were brewing, but it didn't feel like necessarily they were on a collision course, because we've had so much going on at the top of the card around the title. With Hanger, like, so much has been happening. Fightful Select reported today, and it was announced last week, that, like, Samoa Joe is injured. So I'm sure he was supposed to factor into the top of the card, too. Sounds like it was a concussion, which sucks for the big guy. But I just love that we have such a hot angle here, and it's title adjacent. I'm sure it'll be adjacent, meaning one of them will be headed toward a title shot in time, but like, this isn't number one contenders, this isn't a tournament, this is just like a hot title adjacent feud. I absolutely love what we got out of them tonight, and I loved the leaning on the by God Kenny lingo too. I thought that was clever. Your thoughts on this opening segment?
Yeah, so Swerve is clearly going heel. I think we swerved into that lane. I don't think there's any, I mean, how heel he goes, he's always kind of a tweener because he's too well liked to go full,
sure,
full heel, but he's going to be the bad guy. He's going to embrace the bad guy tendencies. He's going to do things that he wouldn't have done a week ago for whatever reason, even though, even when he's been a face, he's kind of mean.
But he always just goes too far with it. Like, that's what I love with Swerve, is he doesn't change. He just goes too far when he's a heel. Everything he does is just too violent. But it's all the same stuff he does as a face.
Yeah, he's just, he could be a bad dude. I the Kenny side was great, I think, because Kenny had good responses to Swerve. Kenny on the mic can sometimes not be as strong as others. I think it's one of his, that's not to say he's bad, it's just not, he can sometimes come off when he's going against someone like Swerve, who's so natural and flowing. Kenny can come off stilted, in my opinion, even though I still love him, but He didn't in this. He was very good in his responses. He had great, like, it was all logical. It was all well thought out. What I think I like most about this is how quickly they decided, since Andrade was going to move forward in the storyline, why don't they just give us War vs. Omega, which is just an awesome feud. Like, that is such a great move. Like, just you thought Omega was going to be in the title match. Like, no, we're just going to give you Swerve versus Omega.
And that's what I kind of liked at the top of the card, is like, all these people are coming for MJF, but you don't know in what order. Like, I did not think Brody King was going to be first ahead of any of the guys that were in that Fatal 4-Way with where he won it. And I certainly didn't think Andrade was going to get thrown into this position. I don't think they did either, assuming that, like, he navigates his way to the top. But I agree with you. Like, why not? Why not give us this? It's right there. And I like that the seeds have been planted with this. Man, it is such an embarrassment of riches on this roster. And whenever they sign people, I'm like, they're full. And then I'm like, but they're not, because of the injuries and just their style is so in-ring focused. It's like, you do need the Tommaso Ciampas of the world to come in and, like, juice stuff up.
That's what, when they're not in their groove, which they're clearly back in their groove, but when they're not, that's what's so, one of the things they do that's so frustrating is that they tend to then get out of, like, stop rotating guys in, and it's like, wait a minute. You have such a strong roster. You can have stories going with all these guys, and they don't demand every second of the, like, MJF was nowhere tonight. But yeah, you know what?
Hanger too.
He did one. Yeah, Hanger did what? 1 30-second promo. That was it.
Yeah.
Like, and that's fine, because they could be on Collision, or Collision's special this weekend. But you know what I'm saying? They could be doing other things, and it doesn't matter. You have enough TV time. If you end enough star power, rotate these guys out. It keeps guys fresh. It protects you against injuries, and it's just more fun. The world title picture is the most fun it's been in a long time, because there's four or five viable candidates, because you keep, and they're not all, no one would have predicted Andrade. No one would have predicted Brody. Swerve, Hangman, and Omega. Swerve and Hangman, sure, but not Omega, because he wasn't anywhere near it for a while.
Yeah,
like, they've done a good job of,
like, Bandido too was like,
yeah.
They had stuff to work off of with it, but I don't think when MJF won, I was like, oh God, we're going to get the same guys coming back for this. And they've very cleverly found a way to not do that yet. I think it's smart.
Yeah. My favorite thing that a wrestling company does, and they don't do it nearly enough, is when people are allowed to have multiple feuds going on at one time.
Yes.
So MJF is allowed to be feuding with Brody King while he's feuding with Hangman, while he's feuding Swerve, while he's feuding with Omega, and Swerve and Omega are feuding, and like all that stuff, because it gives you can make matches based off other feuds that now work into this one, and it just lets you float things in so much nicer, and it uses more guys, and it's why I'm still a little frustrated with the way the tag and the trios division is. Get the trios belt off of I hate to say it, get them off Hangman, get them off the, what is it, horse sticks or what, horse, whatever they are. Get them, put them on like a real trios, put them on the Rascals or someone, and let there be trios. Yeah, thank you. Again, my brain's not, but put them on a team that, and let it just be trios feuds. You'll use up more of your guys, and it's so much more fun, because then you never know who's going to get over from that.
I see Jamie in the chat saying, humans can hate everyone at once. That's why I don't leave my house, which I appreciate that mentality very much. But I also think, like, to your point, this works particularly well because who is the champion? It's the biggest fucking dickhead in the company, and he has the world title belt. People should want vengeance against MJF because he's dickhead, and they should want the world title belt. So everybody having issues with MJF is great. And I really think that this works. And I feel like companies sometimes, when you're as stable heavy as AEW is, they get into a trap of like, well, that guy has to go through everyone in the stable. And some of them have gotten so big, like, you don't have to do that. Like, you can fight with a member of the Callis family, but that's affecting dynamics within the Callis family because they're not a united front right now. So you don't have to go through everybody in the Callis family. So there just seems to be such a restored balance, and they have so many fucking titles that the world title feeling important again is imperative to me. We're gonna talk more about title pictures and running things back in a minute here, but I just wanted to call out more people in the chat who are hanging out with us. Thank you, Jesse Ozak. Thank you, Jamie. I hope you are going to Collision. I'll message you and see if you're going. And if you're not, oh, I can't remember what part of Australia they're in for this because they have the house show too, right? But we'll talk. Jamie and I will talk. But Scott George, Tim McFowell, everybody hanging out in the chat, thank you for doing so. This was a really fun way to kick off the show. And I am team kick off the show with wrestling. But when you do segments like this, as long as you're getting my attention immediately, well, not mad about it. Not mad about it. But we head backstage to see Renee Paquette, who has Kyle Fletcher and Don Callis in the back. Kyle Fletcher says, I want to do this on my own. And Don Callis says, you mean I get to put my feet up on commentary and just watch you? That sounds great to me. And he calls Kyle Fletcher his son. And if you told me 2 years ago that Don Callis was going to be the pride and joy manager at all of wrestling, I feel like everybody is so in on this smarmy-ass version of Don Callis. But that brings us to the Death Riders and Don Callis family. This match was so fun. Like, some of the moments with Takeshita and Moxley, man, there's just a special chemistry there. This started kind of slow, but when it picked way up, in my opinion. This feels like it's running a little long, even though it hasn't been, just because these two stables have been hanging over the product so much over the course of the past year that even though they've kind of just met not that long ago, it just feels like the same players are always in rotation. So I'm like a little bit tired on that, but like, I don't really have any complaints about this match per se. I'm just nitpicking in the sea of what was a phenomenal match. So we get all three members of the Don Callis family stomping out Moxley. Claudio is coming back to save Moxley here after the Death Riders win. And Pac helps to clear the ring of the family. And it leaves Moxley to put Alexander in the sleeper. And then the Death Riders hit the win. Josh Alexander had like a pre-tape last week before Collision that was so phenomenal. And I was like, I didn't know he had that kind of promo in him. And I was like, he doesn't have to because he's in the Don Callis family. But what was cool was the style of that promo was he was the Moxley of that group like at that moment. And everybody around him was fighting. It was very clearly like a Death Riders style promo, but I was like, that really actually worked quite well for Josh Alexander. So I'm just glad to see him getting a little bit more shine of recent. Like, he's been a little bit more pulled to the front with some of this stuff because he's a hell of a worker. We knew that about him, but that promo stood out to me, and I was glad to see some follow through on things tonight. But to me, the money is in like these Takeshita and Moxley moments. Like, they're just fantastic. Claudio, I'm always going to just be mind blown by him. And Takeshita also have a very special chemistry. Anytime they've had a singles match, it's been fucking ridiculous. So this was a whole bunch of fun. I think it started slow, but I think that was kind of the point with this. But this was a bunch of fun, as is the way Jon Moxley, I think, is just meant to work as a face. Like, I enjoy him working as a face so much more, in my opinion. Because he actually does really generate some sort of pathos in you, I feel like. What did you think of our multi-man match here?
It was a lot of fun. I mean, it's not even the close to the best match on the card, and it was a ton of fun. The Death Riders feuding with the Don Callis family has been an interesting little twist on things, because they match up very well in terms of the styles and who's in each. And I think it benefits both groups tremendously. I think it actually benefits the Don Callis family because it's allowing them to use more of their guys regularly against other high-end people. So it's been a lot of fun. Also, it's helped the storytelling because now Don Callis is having to split his attention in multiple feuds over multiple groups and multiple people. And like you said, the family isn't as united. It's just a nice way of, you know, kind of splitting them up a bit. there's comments in the chat, I think, by Jesse Ozark mentioning that no one else besides Mox and the families is a face, but in this feud, they're kind of, it's a, the Death Riders are in a, not the family and the Death Riders, the Death Riders are in a weird spot right now where Mox is very clearly face. Everyone else is not, but they still kind of are. Like, they've kind of reached that point where even with Yuta, it's becoming fun to just hate them.
I am wondering if this is by design, because this did occur to me too. If the idea is like, in order to create a swerve for them to stab Mox in the back, they want us to buy that he's on his side a little bit more. Like, it, I don't think they needed to go this far out of their way to swerve things, but if the thinking is, it was so obvious they were going to turn on Mox that they don't want to do it. They would rather us buy them as a unit more and then have them turn on Mox. I can't argue that that's a bad idea. I think it's overstaying its welcome, but then you see these guys wrestle and you're like, these guys are fucking awesome. Like, I'm not, I don't, they've gotten away from the numbers game trope that was ending every single fucking match. And so I'm excited to see them on my screen because they're all incredible workers. Some more people joining us in the chat. Pieces, Laron Ford is in the chat. I think Pieces was in here before.
But Pieces was here.
Yeah, I didn't know if I shouted him out. So, but I'm with you. They are in an awkward spot, but they put the heeliest heel faction in the world against them. So I think we're supposed to buy that they're at least like more on, I don't even want to say neutral ground, but like when the BCC and the Death Riders started, the idea was like, we don't care if you're heel or face. We just want to beat the hell out of you to make you better and make this company better. So like it kind of feels like a return to the mission statement of what these guys were supposed to be in the first place. So I don't hate that. Know what else I didn't hate? Whoo, this TNT title match. Holy shit, this TNT title match between Tommaso Ciampa and Kyle Fletcher. I am a near fall perv, so I loved this match. But one thing I noticed about tonight's Dynamite, and I don't know if it's one of those things where it's like people, wrestlers will say this, like, if like you instinctively want to do better than the matches that came before you on a show, like you just do. And I don't know if that's what set the tone for the night, but Tommaso Ciampa wrestles A, like he's trying to hurt his opponent, and B, with like an urgency on some of these covers. Like there, it was so funny. I had posted on social media, like, I love how Ciampa went for that cover, like with urgency, because Kyle Fletcher is kicking his ass a little bit. Like he wanted to get the win. And 10 seconds later, Bryan Danielson was like, what a strong cover. And I love that he read that too. And that more than me read it that way, because like this dude has just come in and I feel like really shown just what a badass he is. I think establishing him right away was great. I don't think Mark Briscoe lost anything by losing to Ciampa. I don't think Ciampa really loses anything by losing to Kyle Fletcher. And I like when weekly TV feels consequential, and this match drove that home. This was nuts. The Avalanche Brainbuster was nuts, and then Ciampa hit the German from that. These running knee strikes by Tommaso Ciampa, I was like, you would not know these were like 40-year-old knees that were coming at you. He had some nasty knee strikes in this. We do get the sheer drop brainbuster for the win here, but there were a couple of near falls in here where I just bit on both sides. I bit on late ones with Ciampa. I bit on late ones with Kyle Fletcher. I like Kyle Fletcher going into Grand Slam with the title. I feel like he's probably leaning face with Takeshita here, so why not? We'll talk about the post-match after, because I'm not excited about that. But what did you think of just the match that we got here and the decision to take the title off of Ciampa so quickly?
I'm chomping at the bit for more of this.
Hey!
That's right.
He's saying in the chat, I thought they were going the time limit, and I actually did too. That served as a possibility in my mind, because they were within the last couple of minutes, but I can't wait to see what other sound effects await us as you give your review of this match. That's just gonna make us have to go pee.
This match was incredible. It's amazing that Ciampa losing so quickly at no way hurts him.
Yeah.
Like the team, they're doing a good. Please stick with it. They're doing a good job of reestablishing the TNT belt as like the constantly defended belt, which it should be. If you're gonna have a million fucking belts in this company, which they do have too many, you have to start to differentiate them. And one way to do that is, okay, the world title is the world title. TNT is the one that should be defended all the time, and then therefore should have tons of turnover. Like it should be the one that's held the least, for the shortest amount of time, because it's just impossible to hold it when you're defending it that regularly against high end competition. Which means if you do this long enough down the road, when one guy manages to hold it for months, it's going to be a big deal.
Sure.
Like if you're like, they're only holding it for a couple of weeks at a time, and then suddenly such and such comes in, he's holding it for 3 months. You're like, wow, but he's defending it just as much. That's incredible. Ciampa has fit right in. There was never a guy more perfect for this company. He's got that. He's great on the mic, surprisingly, because he doesn't seem like a guy who should be, but he is.
He
tells such a story in ring that's, I mean, he's just made for this company. I'm glad the fact that they've stopped getting as many WWE cast-offs. That's a better way. I'm glad that didn't deter them from him, because he's such a great fit. Tim Drake and Chaz say, you know, shocked by Fletcher's win, thought Champion would have it for multi-month. I don't know if multi-month, but I didn't expect this quick. I'll be honest with you.
Yeah, it feels gutsy. Like, I kind of like that about it. And I also feel like because of who Ciampa lost it to, he doesn't really lose anything here. Like, Kyle Fletcher is clearly being positioned as a future multi-time world champion. If you told me you thought he was the best in-ring wrestler in the world right now, or top three or top five or whatever, I couldn't find a reason to argue with you, even if I disagreed with you. Like, he's an unbelievable wrestler. He's positioned very protected and very well in the company. I like that he won it clean, too. I thought that was an inspired choice. And I also feel like, because of the reports that Ciampa got signed on a Monday, introduced on a Wednesday, won the title on a Saturday, they were probably just going to carry this program through with Mark Briscoe. And then they decided they had a cool opportunity to do this quick thing with Ciampa, immediately establish him as a championship caliber wrestler. So they did it. I would have... if he had held it, I wouldn't have thought that was a bad decision, but I don't think this is a bad call. And I'm actually very interested to see, like, do we get a rematch out of this? Does Ciampa go off and find friends? Is Johnny Gargano's contract up sooner than we think? And maybe he's on his way. Like, I don't know. I don't know the answer to these things. So I think it's cool. Like, we got this little Sylvie run from Ciampa, and I think that's great. Jamie in the chat saying would have preferred to see Fletcher versus his trainer Robbie Eagles in Sydney. I would have preferred to see Robbie Eagles somewhere on this card. I hope that they sneak him in, whether it's the ROH tapings or whatever. But I would like to see an Australian independent presence, because Jamie, I'm trying out here. Let me tell you, I'm mentioning Brooksy and Jessica Troy and Chevs and the Dropouts and the Velocities, of course, like as much as I can. Because even today I saw like some promotions for the Coliseum show, and I'm like, this Australian independent scene just has a different expectation and quality than the American scene. And I think presentations other places than America are escalated because of scarcity, in a sense. Like here you can be like, I'm going to throw a loop of 10 stops together, and that's what we're going to do. But I think Australia is even like pretty ahead of a lot of like the European scene right now. Like if people are paying attention, that would be, they should be working very hard. Cause if you see like how much of the top talent is Australian right now, it's a lot. Like Rhea Ripley, Kyle Fletcher, there are so many top of the card names that are Australian. So I would like to see them incorporate Robbie, because he is the heartbeat of that scene, and And personally, I'm just a TMDK sicko, but also like there should be an effort to foster that scene, and they should probably start doing it, like international tryouts. Like Tony Khan does genuinely have a pulse on these other scenes, but like in Europe, it's a little different because they have Pro Wrestling Eve and Ospreay's got his ear in there, and there's just like more fluidity. But like they should probably start holding formal tryouts in other places to see what some of these guys and gals are made of. But we are getting Mark Briscoe, Kyle Fletcher 7 in a ladder match. And this is the only thing on the show that I genuinely was like, I don't like this. I've seen it too many times. And I really like Mark Briscoe. I think he is such an incredible face. Like, people just are so drawn to him. But, like, running back to this well, and we already saw a match with ladders in it with them. So to do a blow-off that has a lesser stipulation than the last time around, like, I am a big proponent of, if you are going to escalate this, you have to do a stipulation that is more violent than the last time. I just wish Kyle Fletcher had said, like, you don't get to challenge for this title while I'm holding it again. Like, just do that and do a match. But this was the only thing I didn't like. I wish Kyle Fletcher had, like, held this open challenge. I feel like there was a better usage of it. But what do you think about running this back for the 7th time? Do you think somebody might bleed in this?
I don't have words. This is the only thing I'm going to say about this. And I'm not a fan of 7 times. I mean, every now and again, it's okay. I don't know if that this would be the feud that I'd want the best of 7 for. However, you're at 6, and Kyle was the one with the most recent loss. It's not the worst thing in the world to say, we'll do a best of 7, give him back his win. Like, to be like, he comes out of it having put Mark Briscoe firmly behind him. He won the feud. He won the ladder match. He's done with Briscoe forever.
That's a fair
a one point. Week build. It's not even 1 week. It's a half a week build.
I think I don't disagree with you. Like that makes wrestling sense. I don't disagree with that at all. I think I just my Kyle Fletcher stock is very high. Like, anytime I see this dude wrestle, tonight was no exception. I'm like, I want to see him versus his class of guys that need to be made. Like, I want to see him and Lee Moriarty. I want to see him and Daniel Garcia, because I believe that strongly in Kyle Fletcher, that I think he is, like, at Ring General, make other guys level, even as young as he is, that I just want to see it freshened up. But I'm sure we will be getting some interesting Don Callis family developments. Some people were saying they should have just done Ciampa and Mark Briscoe versus Aussie Open, because like that could have been a cool thing to reunite Aussie Open for a night. But I also get it. Like, Kyle Fletcher is just on a different level.
It's a half a week build. They established it on a Wednesday. It's happening on a Saturday. It's not his next feud. It's not, assuming he wins, like if he loses, I'm gonna lose my mind, but let's just assume he wins the feud. It's a half a week. It's on a collision. I know it's Grand Slam, but it's collision. It's not a pay-per-view. It's it'd be like just random collision or random dynamite. Like, we're fine. And he gets to leave. He gets to go into Australia like us cheered, and gets to leave cheered. Like, I don't know who, like, you could have put against him against some rando, but at least this way they have like their match with their big spots and their whatever. And he gets to avenge a loss, his most recent loss. You know, he beat the guy who beat Briscoe, but he also beat Briscoe. And then he'd be like, okay, now he goes and feuds with, and I don't know who he feuds with. I mean, I'll let them pick the next cool guy, but I get you. I get it. Like apparently a lot of people are very unhappy with this, taking a fall, saying the SGS, but they're unhappy with everything. That's their gimmick.
I think they have a legitimate gripe to stand on. Like, we have seen so many of these matches in such a short time. Like, I don't feel like we dug our heels into a Kyle Fletcher title reign, and then we're starting Kyle Fletcher's title reign with the same thing. So I understand that. But I agree with you. You can put a button on this at Grand Slam and call it a day, and everyone will watch the match and lose their minds.
And let's be fair here. There's a little bit of, listen, everyone loves Mark Briscoe, and I think he's a beloved, and I think he's a lot of fun, but people don't view him currently on the level of Kyle Fletcher. Kyle Fletcher, like you just said, is one of the best wrestlers in the world, and no one views Mark Briscoe at that level. You were going to say to someone, we'll give you seven matches with Will Ospreay versus Kyle Fletcher.
Yeah.
You people would be like, no, let's keep going. Like, especially if you could tell the story right. People, best of sevens are traditionally tough sells anyway. Most of them no one likes. But if you do them, they have to be done with guys who people view are on the same level, so that it is truly two guys who just cannot get away from each other. But
I also think they kind of fell into a best of seven, and that part of it I actually like. They didn't set out to have a best of seven. They had six matches and realized that they have to get a seventh to square it away. So I don't hate that either. Like, I actually prefer that, because when they say best of seven, we all just sit around waiting for the seventh.
No.
You just start playing the math, right? Like, yeah. So
I never want an established best of seven. I never want someone to be like, this is the best way. Like, one guy wins unexpectedly, then he loses right back. And then maybe he loses again because the other guy cheated, which justifies another. Like, it all has happenstance. But no one's viewing these as, like, they're just not viewing the same level. Like, Jesse's actually referencing one that was, I think, quite popular, Sheamus and Claudio.
Yes.
Like, and if I recall, my memory's not that great. That didn't start out best of seven. I think they built into it. And that was two guys. The reason it was people loved it is because, again, I think people viewed them on the same level. I don't think people are viewing Mark Briscoe on the same level as Kyle Fletcher, because Mark Briscoe's a lot of fun, but he's more comedy. Kyle Fletcher is the one coming up to be like the next guy.
Well, and so the other thing with a best of seven with these two is, like, I love Mark. He's pretty one-dimensional. Like, you're not getting seven different types of match here. Part of my issue with this is the stipulation, because we've already seen these guys using ladders before. The last one ended on the ladder spot. So it's when you think of, like, Death Triangle versus the Elite or whatever, like, we got seven very different matches. I feel like a lot of people are like, we're getting the same thing seven times rather than seven different matches. But who knows? Who knows? Maybe they'll surprise us. But let's keep moving along here. We get a Babes of Wrath video package. And I feel like Penelope and Megan are going to take it. I don't know if they take it in Australia, if they want to give that heat of Harley losing in Australia. But it feels to me like that's the move. And we're starting to see the rest of the pieces of the tag division start to coalesce around it. My question for you is, do you think they pull the trigger on Mega Bad? Terrible name. And there's free agents out there, two very silly gals who I know would be way up on your fun scale. They didn't debut at Royal Rumble. We have this big Australia show. Do you think AEW is going to get iconic or inspired? Whichever way you want to go.
They're iconically inspired. I know that's the rumor out there because of Sean, I think, putting out there that there's other female signings, and that would be the most obvious they need.
Sure.
This is a tough one. LaRon has, this is going to make my point, which is Babes of Wrath need to drop the title because Willow has the TBS title. I don't want her. I don't like tag champions having singles. It's my most infuriating thing. You should have to focus on the title that you have. So they should have to lose because
of Ryan, but here we are.
I know. You know, I only make sense when I'm sick, so it's okay. They need to, and Scott actually has a question that I was going to wait to the main event, but I'm going to ask right now. Were Willow and Harley supposed to be in Australia already? Was that the argument that they're going to say?
That's the story that they told. I don't know if it's true, but that was the justification.
Just because, you know, they weren't there to help Stat, yeah, which makes sense. Yeah. Okay, but anyway. So let's just say for funsies that it is iconic or inspiring, or I don't know another I one. Interesting. But
Billy Kay
say
would make that work somehow. They'd be interesting.
I think if They're when they debut. Are this sorry, I'm Googling something real quick.
There you go. I'll say this. I feel like it's indicative that they were not in the Royal Rumble and the Bellas were. Like, if they were going to set up tag programs for the Iconics comeback. Because the Bellas have said publicly a couple times they really wanted to work with them because they feel like they're such a fun team to
Okay.
be shitty, like, diva-y heels to. So I'm going to say that I think they are.
I didn't want to ask because I didn't want to seem dumb. They are Australian. I was not 100% sure on that. It's been that long. And with my thing, I'd say anything like Ryan, that was a British accent, be like, fuck. So they're going to debut, especially if they debut in Australia, as faces. Like, there's just no way people don't cheer when they come out. So who would they be best to debut against? A heel team that just beat Babes Wrath, who
There you
beat
go.
a hometown girl. Like, that is the way to do it. And again, I'm gonna stick to my whole decision is based on Willow has a singles title. If Willow didn't have a singles title, I'd say give the Babes Wrath more time. But it just if you want the tag division to work, you have to have the women in it only be tag champions when they're tag champions. They can't you can't have constant like the men's tag division for the most part. Every now and again, there's an exclusion, but for the most part, when someone is in the tag division or they're part of a tag team, that's all they care about. It's after
Yes.
that they start to go for singles. It never works when you're trying to cross over. Like, that's why the trios has died. There's too much of taking guys out of the trios and putting them into singles.
I agree, and I feel like there is I feel like it was the timing wasn't great to do that. Like they were a Franken team anyway to get here. I feel like the tag division, we'll talk about it in a minute, but like we're actually filling it in with some decent teams now. If they bring in the Iconics for some fun, and then you have the Brawling Birds coming back, and you have Tony and Mina, I'm assuming after this tag program, kind of reuniting their way through. Like there's some more meat on the bone than there was when they launched this thing. I just also want to see the talent rotation of who's there improve, like your Nyla Roses, and I think Thunder Rosa is finally cleared, it looks like again. So that is my hope. But let's move along to Danny Garcia and Clark Connors versus Orange Cassidy and Roderick Strong. Quite the night for the Tekla Clark Connors couple. I think they're still dating, last I knew. But we have Orange Cassidy and Connors looking to start here, and Roddy from the beginning is like, I'm out on this. No. And John Moxley is on commentary, and he starts giggling like an idiot when Roddy just pieces out in the match because he, in the beginning, is like, I don't know. I don't really buy these guys as a viable team. And then he was like, oh, I don't know. He's just gonna peace out in the middle of it. He was cracking me up on commentary. But this was a really, really, really fun match. I like seeing Clark Connors working in AEW. I think he works well in this presentation. It feels like the War Dogs are maybe all over the map. I don't know if Finlay is going to AEW or NXT. There's been reports of him talking to both companies. Driller Maloney is staying in New Japan. Gabe Kidd has certainly been working AEW, so my guess is he's either on a contract deal or a hybrid contract with New Japan still or whatever. But I like Clark Connors in this environment. I think he fits in really well. I like John Moxley saying like, we're not in the same stable, but like we're cool with those guys. I thought he was really good on commentary, but we do have Orange Cassidy and Roddy winning kind of here. But the big news here is that Darby Allin is in the crowd waiting to spear Clark Connors, which is impressive. He remains not dead somehow. But Cassidy hits the Tope Suicida on Garcia, and we have Garcia attacking. His attack is countered by Orange Cassidy, excuse me, for the roll-up win here. This was more a storyline advancement, but this was very, very fun. And then post-match, we get Timeless Toni Storm and Luther from the opera box in the balcony here. Toni is just like still so unbelievably over. Like cheers of the night, maybe with her. Like it's just for existing. Like they have done an incredible job just keeping her hot, hot, hot. But she calls out Marina. She calls out Wheeler. She's had enough of him, and she's gonna shave Marina's head and sell her at Spirit Halloween. calls Wheeler a little shit. There's a bunch of Wheeler heat spots here. This is all perfectly fun, but this is just to get Tony on essentially the go home to her home country here. What did you think of the match and the post-match?
I'm glad that they established the relationship between Connors and the Death Riders pretty early, because that was going to be, I think, a hang up for a lot of people to be like, hey, what happened? Like, right, is he a Death Rider? Is he not? Didn't love the Roderick Strong thing, to be quite honest.
I'll tell you why I like it.
Why do you
like
it? I feel
like they don't do it if Kyle O'Reilly's not on his way back soon, and I need Kyle O'Reilly on my screen. So that's my hope.
If that is the case, then I can change. I reserve the right to change my opinion.
That's fair.
As it stands right now, I don't love that. I think I liked Roddy being the reluctantly involved guy who would eventually come to embrace it. Like, that was a fun story. I think it's now, maybe that's too traditional and they wanted to go the other route where the guy doesn't eventually embrace it. I don't know. I think it was more fun for Roderick that way than to have him be a heel. He's been a heel for most of his run. Give him something fun to work with. That's just my humble opinion. And maybe there's more to that story and Kyle comes back and he reunites him, or Orange wins him over with love. I don't know. That being said, I was not a fan of him. And then I'm not a fan of the essential handicap match, because that's just not a fun match. So, but they worked it well with Connors getting to do a couple of really cool moves and showing off his skill. And then they evened it out by having Darby basically kidnap Connors, which was a very cool moment. It came out of nowhere and just, like, you know, you didn't see it happening, and it just, boom, he's pulled into the crowd.
It legitimately caught me off guard, which that doesn't happen a lot with, like, post-match friend shenanigans. Yeah.
Exactly. So I was a fan of that. I loved how mad Daniel Garcia was that he lost. That kind of anger is, it's kind of rare in the wrestling for some reason. Like, guys look angry, but that was, like, I think when we considered the Death Riders and all the different personalities, I think making Daniel Garcia the one who cares the most about his wins and losses might be the best route for him, because it's a character thing and it could take him a lot of fun paths. The post stuff, so is either Marina or Tony going to lose their hair? Is that the plot here?
Man, I feel like either of them could pull it off, which is what's so funny. So they cut Mina's hair, which makes me think, I don't know if you can do this with hair cutting, but, like, who stands tall, rules tell you that it's Marina who's going to get her head shaved. But, like, Tony, you could have her wearing so many funny wigs. Like,
that's what my brain went to. And she seems like the one who'd be down to shave her head.
She does, but, like, Marina would also be such a fucking badass. Like,
well, I think if Marina does it, she doesn't go bald. I think they do, like, half.
Maybe.
I think Tony gets like a half, like two like things of it, and then they stop and they cut away, and then she comes out the next week. She's got like a stylized half, because she'd rock that look. So
she could. She really could. I think either of them could pull it off. Do we feel like it's going to be on the gal side, though? That seems to be the consensus, I think.
That's the way they hyped it up, wasn't it?
Yeah, that is.
Like,
but Moxie, I mean, I guess Wheeler was like, whoever takes the pinfall.
I mean, the Yuta.
Is like, it's begging for that, but tonight it was the gal, so I don't know.
Yuta losing his hair
and then turning face.
I mean, that would be when he would turn face.
Was making him evil.
Guys, I don't know what happened. My hair's gone. I'm just totally different today. And as it grows back, you just seem getting more and more evil again. but it could also be part of the reasons he turns away from Moxley. Because, like, if they do it in some way where he feels like Mox didn't help him as part of the match that he should have, and then he loses his hair because of it.
I mean, Mox can't take a bullet for him. He's already bald, so it's like.
No, but, like, maybe there's a part of the match where, like, maybe Mox is on commentary or something, and Wheeler tries to do something that Mox would need to help him with, and Mox doesn't do it, then Wheeler blames Mox because now Wheeler's bald.
That's fair. I wouldn't be mad about that. Would not be mad about that. It's fun because I feel like Orange Cassidy doesn't lose his hair, but I feel like literally any of the other three could. And I feel like normally those things are so obvious. Like, So I'm here for it. I don't think Toni loses in her hometown, but that would be heat that would follow Marina to a different city. So I would not be mad about it. Like, the beat someone in their hometown thing only works if that heat stays with you. And I think that would absolutely be following her all around. But we get this quick Andrade and Don Callis promo. This is the most clicked in version of Andrade we've ever had. Don says that they are family. It's an honor to have him in the family. And that he guarantees Andrade is going to defeat Hangman and take the title from MJF. I think half of that is true. I think there's some schmazzy interference, whatever, that costs Hangman. And I think we do get Andrade versus MJF because I don't think they want to run a hanger back that quick. Especially when he does have other titles going on. But Hanger has a promo here. And he's pacing around outside in the night, which is not safe. But he says he thought for sure Kenny was going to be, or he thought it was going to be him and Kenny at Grand Slam. But no matter what, he is going to defeat Andrade and reclaim his world title. So quick promos, but effective. And like, it reminds me of early AEW, where we've talked about this a lot. Part of the rotation of talent burnout has been like all the same people are doing the same stuff all the time. This was like old school AEW was like they'd sprinkle in advanced stories or remind you of a story that's there. And then the next week you'd have a heavy presence from those people on the show. I love that groove when AEW is in it. Liked that with Hanger and MJF tonight. Your thoughts on either of these? I'm loving this version of Andrade. He is in beast mode, man.
Yeah, I don't have a lot of thoughts. It was pretty standard Andrade Hangman stuff at this point. But I am impressed with what they've done with Andrade since he came back because he's very different than his first time around and in a very good way. I mean, he was great his first time around, but somehow it's just, I don't know what's different, but something is. Maybe it's that he takes off his pants.
Could be the pants removal. He does feel like the best version of him that we've seen on TV. And this feels very like accidental because of what happened with Samoa Joe, that they just like pulled this through and are just riding this wave. And I think it's smart of them because this is establishment of another top guy who has always had the talent. And now everything else is clicking in. But we move along to our number one contenders match for the AEW World Tag Team titles, the Young Bucks versus the Rascals versus a returning Private Party, which it's great to see them back on screen. This match was a lot of fun. You should go watch it. Mark Quinn looks like he ate another Mark Quinn. I don't know if him and Swerve just were on the same diet or whatever the hell, but these guys came back absolutely jacked. This is the first time they've been on TV in over a year. I think there was a lot of speculation that they were going to go to WWE. I am glad that they're still around. I don't know if that's because they're still under contract or what, but I'm very glad that they're here. I think the tag division is taking shape, but a lot of people are frustrated by the booking here because we're headed to the Young Bucks and FTR again. I feel like this isn't just the Young Bucks and FTR. I think maybe Cope and Christian show back up. I think maybe there's a tag team we're not thinking about that gets injected here somehow. I don't think they're running this back just to run it back again. Like, if they do, I think Cope and Christian are coming out to set out a TLC match at Revolution or something. Like, I don't think this is just to run it back with these guys. The post-match is really fun because Dax is very sassy in the post-match here. he's like, I would be so embarrassed if I were you. That I didn't have enough success other places. I had to start my own company. And they super kicked the dog shit out of the microphone that's in his hand because it goes flying. The Young Bucks take the tag titles and they rub Stokely on the head. They threaten. They feign like they're going to hurt him. But this was all great. Glad to see Private Party back. Don't know if I love the decision of the Bucks, but something is sitting in me like, this ain't it. This isn't the extent of what they're doing, because I don't think they run this back just for kicks and giggles. I think something bigger is going to brew here if they're going to have these teams touch again. What were your thoughts on Private Party's return, the match, and the outcome?
Okay, hold on. Before we went, did you say kicks and giggles?
Did I?
Yeah, instead of shits and giggles, you said kicks and giggles.
It's very possible. I'm very dyslexic. And I was probably thinking of the kicks that came.
Yeah, that's. I thought you were doing a pun, and even though I love a pun, I still have to boo it as like part of it.
Sound effects, and that's fine.
I do. Really cool to see Private Party back. I wonder if Sean knew something, because it's very odd that all over today was about Private Party still being with AEW. What a weird time on that.
He does have a lot of very conveniently timed news stories.
Yes,
he does tend to break news on the day in which they correlate with the promotion if they are not like mega super urgent.
Very, very odd. But that being said, so glad they're back. Yeah, Mark Quinn does look big, though he had been doing that for a while. I think he had recognized Isaiah looked not big, but a little more cut, I guess. I don't know, maybe a bit bigger. They
were hitting the gym over the past year at some point, that's for sure. Yeah.
Like Isaiah now looks as big as either of the Bucks, and I always felt like he looked skinny even compared to them. And so and I'm not saying they're big guys, so when he would look skinny compared to them, it was like, wow, you're skinny. So really cool to see them back. That they're, you know, you have them, you have the Rascals showing out. Like, you do have some really fun tag teams now in.
Yes. Wesley, especially today, I feel like we were like, oh, there's the Wesley we know and love. Getting to see him show out a little bit.
When was the last time the Bucks and FTR wrestled?
Good question. Let's look it up. I think it's more, it just feels like one of them is always holding the belts than even them facing each other. But when was the last time that they faced each other?
Pieces is saying almost 2 years ago.
Okay, that's not that crazy. I guess it's just that they both hover over that picture so much. If it's going to be something that you give to crowds that don't normally get to see this, that's pretty cool.
Well, that there's that. Plus, again, 2 years, like, I don't know. I that doesn't bother me. And I understand people being like, well, they always have the belts. Yeah, but everyone else wants to go out there and say they're the best, you know, tag teams of all time. Well, then they're going to have some wins. Like, you know.
It also feels sus to me. Like there's just something in my gut that's like, this isn't the full story. Like there's just been, Cope and Christian have been gone too long. There's been way too much talk of, like, the next pay-per-view is in Toronto, I think, or in Canada at least. I'm like, that the reception that Cope got last time they were there, I'm like, all these pieces are adding up to something's happening after.
So you could have this go two ways. One, the Young Bucks could win because Cope and Christian come back and FTR, and they're just going to feud with FTR, no titles involved. Sure. And the Young Bucks could win. And then, of course, you could have it go the other way. I know Tim McFalls in chat really wants new blood. I understand. I agree with that. Like, you do want new blood. Whenever FTR or the Young Bucks have a title, there's always going to be, well, they need to wrestle for it. And I know you're going to say, well, they shouldn't have the title. Well, yes, but someone beating them means a whole lot more.
Sure.
So there's it's Private Party, but just because they were trying to say Private Party is the one who dethrones FTR. Well, they'll beat FTR, but if FTR beats the Young Bucks, then they'll have beat FTR, who had a solid, well-defended reign. If they beat FTR, who has not beaten the Young Bucks, well, the first thing people are going to say is, well, when is it Private Party versus the Young Bucks?
Sure.
That's going to be,
right now too, who knows, like, maybe the next team to hold those titles they want to be a heel and they want them to take it off of a face Young Bucks or whatever, you know what I mean? Like, it could be as simple as that.
And again, this feud has only been built over like 2 or 3 weeks. It's not like a months long thing. Like, they'll move on from it quickly.
We will see about that. But it was nice to hear the shots theme. It really is. Like, that one is one that should never go away unless it's with like great intent, like whether it's like a mega character change or a stable or something like that. That theme is an iconic one. Let's keep moving along here. We get a Will Ospreay vignette. I'm assuming he's going to be back for Wembley because they like put the Wembley show reminder like, hey, tickets go on sale on March 16th. So what's great about that is that means he's pacing very well, like with his injury. I'll cut to the chase with you, Ryan. Do you think we get AJ Styles versus Will Ospreay as the main event of Wembley Stadium?
I definitely think we get one side of that. I don't know about the other. I'm very torn. Like I don't care because I'm not an insider. So me just giving an opinion doesn't mean like
I should know. I don't think any insiders have an idea. Yeah. To be honest, I don't think anybody. I don't know if AJ Styles knows. Like I don't know.
Listen, I'm sure he'd have a lot of fun in AEW, but I also don't know necessarily like if. Like TNA just makes more sense to me, even though they are have the relationship with WWE, it still just makes more sense. Like that's where he came up. That was his place. Why not one last?
It's the house that he built, Ryan.
Yes.
But he's also the belle of the ball. Like he could go to all these places. Like he could have a one-off with Will Ospreay and go to TNA and go to New Japan or whatever. Like I could very much see him being that dude about it. But we will see. It's all entirely his call, and that I think is really cool. Like that's how you know you've left a legacy is like literally everybody will want to work with you. I just wonder if there's not a bigger match that they could give Will Ospreay in his home country at the biggest show of the year. Like that's pretty cool. So selfishly, I hope that happens because I want to see that aspect of it. But we do get this MJF and Brody King video package. I thought it was so much fun what they did with this story last week. Not a ton new here, just the video package. And then we're on to this strap match. And we get a new world champion out of this. Tekla looked fantastic in this. Chris also looked great in this. I thought it was a gutsy call to do. I'm sick of the ref spot, but it wasn't too egregious. It wasn't great, but it wasn't horrendously stupid. The strapped tombstone is nasty work. Chris whipping herself with the strap as like a getting herself hyped up thing was pretty cool. Tekla came out like a ball of fire from her entrance through the match. They have done everything right with Tekla since bringing her on TV. They've protected her wins and losses. Her presentation has translated very, very well. This made sense because it's been going on since the Blood and Guts feud, which I think is really cool and special. I really appreciate what they have managed to do with this story. I felt like Chris's title reign got underserved by a lot. I also don't know if she was fully clicking. Like, I think there's still some not uncertainty about who she is as a wrestler, but I think we need just like a couple more layers with Miss Chris. Like I think that would be helpful. I think that would be helpful. But I thought this was a gutsy move. Chris Statlander is one of those people that you're like, you know, she'll be back in the world title. I don't mind this being a short title reign at all. And I'm intrigued to see what's to come for Tekla because there's endless directions you can go with someone like her. I think it's a cool move to bring her in and have her win the world title not that much later. I am curious to see who it gets handed off to. If Queen Aminata is ready at some point in her mix, I think that would be a very, very cool handoff. Also wouldn't hate Tekla versus Mercedes. If Mercedes comes back maybe a little more humble this time around, that wouldn't be the worst, but who knows? I don't know if they even know. But that was our main event, this strap match that started right around 10 o'clock. It was a badass match. Chris got busted open pretty early in it. They beat the heck out of each other, man. And I think they've done such a better job with bringing in free agents and having intentionality around that, especially the women's free agents. There was a lot of we bring you in and then you get lost in the shuffle for a long time. And Mariah May, Tekla, there's on the men's side, like they've had Speedball and Kevin Knight on TV in good spots. Like they've gotten much better about having plans for people that come in instead of just we're padding the roster, and it's paying dividends, I think. We did have the Sisters of Sins coming in here. They also beat Chris down after the match, but the Brawling Birds come down to Chris's aid. Commentary did mention that Willow and Harley were in Australia, as we talked about earlier, so they could not come to her aid during this, which I thought was a nice justification. I thought that was a nice justification, but some really, really, really good shit here. What did you think of the match and the decision to crown a new champion?
Match was incredible. Guess I never realized before tonight that that you could have a strap match that wasn't four corners. I always just assumed they were one and the same. So I was a big fan of that because I hate the four corner stipulation on a strap.
Four corners thing. It's the worst.
Yeah. So I was much happier to see that you didn't need to hit the four corners. The match was incredible, violent, but in the right way. Didn't feel like sometimes matches can feel violent for violence's sake, and this didn't feel that way. They looked like two women who were trying to hurt each other to do something. Played to both their strengths. I mean, early on, Statlander just got to dominate and prove how strong she was. It wasn't until the match went on that she started to get put in bad positions. Shocked by the ending. I mean, they protected her because it did take, you know, the death shot, yeah, to come out, but. You know, her reign was getting better, so it kind of sucks. Like, they were figuring her stuff out a bit, I feel like, who she is. I do think she'll come out stronger for this. I do think it has given them a little bit of idea of who Stat is, and Stat is basically the ass kicker who's not afraid of anyone. And that is okay to be your personality. You're more than happy to just let that be who you are.
Yeah, if people are on board with it, I think it's great. I felt like sometimes she wasn't certain in it. Like, that... And it, like, honestly, it's so complex. Like, I feel like there was a lack of support and screen time as well. Like, the creative was kind of, I like that they carried over what happened at Blood and Guts to pay off all this time later. I think that's cool. But, like, there's no breathing room on this product for women's wrestling. And that part fucking sucks. But I do think if you're going to be the ass kicker, there still needs to be... Like, we're already on her side, right? And I think everybody loves Chris. So, like, I don't know. Like, I feel like it was a really bad decision to mix it in with Willow and Harley. Like, I don't think that went the way that they were hoping. Like, it didn't feel like this powerhouse group. It felt like everybody's powers got diminished. And I'm very nervous that they're just going to turn her heel. Like, I don't want them to do that.
Oh my God, it'll kill her. If they turn her, that's going to really kill her character.
Like, I don't want her to get jealous of Willow. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want that to be the next thing.
No, I think, like I said, I think Tim Drake is kind of agreeing with me that he feels like Chris had hit her stride in the last month or so as champion. I do too. I think that's where you saw more of her personality of like, I'm okay just being violent and responding with violence. Just let her lean into that. Just you don't need to be more than that. You could be a good guy too that way. Like, you can be, like, you could be friends with Willow. You could be friends with Harley. And your whole thing is, listen, I'm not as silly as you are. I go out and I beat the hell out of everyone. Though she is silly because she was an alien for how long. But I think they found her out a little bit. So it would be interesting to see what they do with her now that she doesn't have the belt. Tim McFalls and Chris Tekla have become undeniable. Kinda. Part of me still was like, they had kind of given her some pushback. The biggest problem, and I don't want to rain on an overall good night, but it kind of brought up with women's wrestling is the things we're loving about the men's side just do not exist on the women's side.
Yeah. As soon as Mercedes went away, like, so did the TV time for the world. Like, I'll say this, Mercedes is an impact player. You can't deny that. Like, as much as people want to shit on her. But there was some WrestleStats had some stat of like that there's 110 wrestling minutes on AEW Dynamite on average, which is very high for a wrestling show. And about 10 of those minutes go to the women. That's fucking pathetic in 2026. When you have three titles, especially. That's fucking pathetic.
It's just You know, I like that they've mixed in Toni Storm with with Marina in its own story that's taking part of a bigger story. Like, that's fun to do. But then give me another women's feud that's only women's feud with all the talent you have in there. Part of that comes down to the tag team being tied in with the fucking, like, the main titles. Like,
yeah.
If let's just play this out real quick. If Mega Bad wins on Saturday, let's assume that, let's just play it. They win, and then the Inconics, they debut. Well, then you have four women who are in their own feud doing their own thing. You could then have Harley and Willow feuding with the along, I guess, with Stat against the Triangle of Madness. First with singles and tag team, but they're doing their own thing. So now you've got four women over here, six women over here, doing their own things. They're no longer tied up with one another. Because right now, it's just six women all together.
Your mic went out.
I somehow hit mute on my swing back. I'm just saying, it's right now, it's instead of being four and six, so 10 total, it feels like it's just six total with an occasional couple coming in and out as needed.
Yeah, I agree.
And you have so much talent.
And like, I was like emotionally guarded with the women's tag titles because I really wanted them to expand screen time, but I was like, but they probably won't. And screen time has gone down since they got introduced. So
I understand it becomes a chicken or an egg situation of like, I'm not trying to, but because everyone I follow and am friends with loves the women's wrestling, but I understand, I guess, if you're looking at certain metrics, they don't always get the highest stuff. So they're like, well, what, we got to give TV. But
you do dog shit with them though. Like Tony does. Tony, Mercedes does, because you put a bunch of work into Mercedes, right? Like,
well, you took my next, like, people will watch if they have a reason to care. If they know that these women are just going to be gone in a week, or like their story's just get, like, if they know they only have to pay attention to six or seven people, then there's the six or seven they want to see. Sure. But if suddenly you start to develop more out of that, they're going to want to watch these other people. Also, not even because they're going to be important, but just because these other wrestlers will have time to develop their personalities, which will bring in fans to those women. So I understand it's a, like, okay, right now their time, when you put them on, they don't get as many people or whatever bullshit. But if you give them the time, if you are willing to sacrifice, quote unquote, for the time period to build up the other women, they will eventually pay off. Like, it is, it's like saying right
people
now,
like watching hot women beat each other up, actually.
Yeah. But it's like, I'm trying to think of someone like a really good example. I mean, there's plenty of great examples, but you know what? We'll just do the Rascals. It's like saying, like, right now, I know the Rascals had TNA, but let's just assume a lot of AEW people didn't know TNA. It's like, well, we don't know who the Rascals are or Jet Speed or any of them. So you're not going to put them on. They're not going to be popular. But notice, the more you put them on, the more popular they become because people start buying in. You just have to be willing to give them the time.
And the work. Like, do the creative work to make good cohesive stories. Like, every time they actually do the work with the women, it pays off. Like, Mercedes is a ratings get. Tony is a ratings get. Willow, I think, is a ratings get when they're doing stuff that fucking matters with them. So it's just, it's the same old story. It's unfortunate. But it is a jarring reversal of, like, as soon as Mercedes Moné stepped out for a second. Like, they just didn't even try and say, like, oh, well, Willow's caught up in this, so that means we have this other slot for what? No, that just doesn't exist. And that's fucking crazy to me. That's fucking crazy to me. But a fucking crazy match to end the night. A fucking crazy Toxic Spider is your new Women's World Champion, which is pretty cool. Incredible dynamite on the whole tonight. Like, we'll always have our frustrations with women's screen time, but, like, it is a hot time to be an AEW fan. Like, tonight was white hot going into Grand Slam. Jamie, if you're still in the chat, I'm so glad that you're going. I saw that you had mentioned that earlier. I love that you get to go to some live wrestling at a time when the product is really riding high as well. I don't know if we're gonna, I don't think we were planning on doing anything for Grand Slam Collision because it goes on so late here, but maybe I'll do like a watch along type thing if you want to join or something. I might figure that out because that's going to be such a fun and loaded card. I would not hate talking about it. We'll see how my little lungs are feeling, but that does wrap it up for us tonight. I checked my DMs because I accidentally sent Sean a link to this show because I'm so used to sending StreamYard links around. I was like,
you're more than welcome to join.
That's what I said. I was like, LOL, ignored. This was the Mark Order link. I was like, unless you have news to break, then fuck yeah. But no scoops for us today. They're still on air, unfortunately.
Damn it.
But we will get on out of here. Ryan, where can people find you? And where can people heal you, more importantly, as you're working through this illness?
I don't think anyone can heal me besides time. Again, I am surprised. I'm trying not to cough on mic, but it's been tough, and I've only blown my nose once. I've really fought strong through this. You can follow me on all our socials at Mark Order Pod. You can also follow my history YouTube channel at Here for History, and on all socials at Here for History at _ Here for History. I won't have something out this week because today is the first day that I've had any kind of a voice over the last 2 weeks had any kind of a voice. So
I'm here to wreck that for you.
Yep. So I'll have a new one out next week when I've actually had time to record and do all that stuff. Apparently, you know, I don't think anyone needs to hear me scratchy trying to get through my topic. So, but I will have new ones out as soon as I can talk, like I said. And Kate, when you're not here, you're on Fightful, but tell people where you are.
I'm on Fightful. That's what I mean. I do things over there on Mondays behind the paywall, Tuesdays and Fridays as well on the main channel, as well as PLE's the pay-per-view on Fightful Select. Sometimes I fill in when Sean runs from the grind or when Alex runs from the grind on Wednesdays over there, but don't watch that. Watch this show. They have enough.
What the hell, guys?
They've got enough viewers over there. Okay. Watch this one. I'll shoot on Sean Rossap and Alex Pulowski. We're the better show. Follow us.
Damn straight.
We have way more scoops and analysis here at the Mark Order. You don't even have to watch that show to see if that's true. That's just how much that is the case. So,
listen, I'm willing to put out a lot of scoops. Maybe only one or two of them will hit ever over the course of, you know, the million I put out, but I'll do it.
I will gladly make shit up as well. Like,
oh yeah.
Yeah. I heard a hot rumor that the Iconics are coming to AEW with Brody King. They're going to be Brody King's backup. And
two of them walking out with a mask and the jacket.
Yeah, they're reforming House of Black, but it's House of Brody. And now I want to see that, actually. Now I've worked myself into that. Like, the Iconics with Brody King would be hysterical. Like, Billy Kay as backup there would be incredible.
Her trying to bark.
That will do it for us tonight at the Mark Order. Buy a t-shirt of ours on Pro Wrestling Tees, would you, if you haven't already? What's the hold up? Give us your money. You give us your time already. You might as well fork it over. Hand it over. You can just Venmo me, actually, and I'll send you one. You can cash at me. You can go find me there, and it'll definitely get a t-shirt if you do that. But I guess if you want to go through Pro Wrestling Tees, that's fine. I definitely would never just pocket your money.
Never.
But do feel free to go to Pro Wrestling Tees and pick up a Mark Order Podcast t-shirt. We got 4 lovely designs up there for you. Ryan, you don't have to pull them up. You're sick. Okay.
I wasn't going to, so don't worry about it.
That's not the, we're a less professional show than we were a few months ago, and that's fine. I relish. We're going to get out of here. We're going to say goodbye. And good night.
Okay, so I put up the outro. I hit one gong. Outro.
This concludes the Mark.